Spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Good morning and welcome to the 3CR Spoken Word program, and I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. My name is Di Cousins, and today I'm talking to Rodney Williams about the Tanka form of poetry, which originated in Japan. Welcome, Rodney.
Welcome. Thank you very much for having me here.
And I'm just interested in what Tanka is and how you discovered it.
I discovered it through working in haiku to start with. I've been working in both of those forms for about 20 years and found some very supportive editors of journals, Beverly George, people like that. And they gave opportunities there. Perhaps less opportunities now to publish in that form, which is a five-line form, older than haiku and what haiku grew out of, in fact. But the opportunities to get published in haiku internationally are significantly greater, alas, than they are in Tanka these days.
So you've just said that Tanka has a five-line form as opposed to the normal three-line form of the haiku.
Yeah.
What else is different about the Tanka?
Because it has a little more space, it can allow for some differences, as I see it, in terms of giving an emotional depiction of a situation and then perhaps implicitly a sense of reaction to that, whereas the minimalism of haiku, traditionally it has kept people out of it, at least in a lot of cases, and focuses upon a moment, a season, traditional imagery for that. Tanka can use those elements as well, but there's a notion in both forms of a sense of what we call link and shift. So even though they're three lines long or five lines long, they're not a continuous sentence across the whole poem necessarily, and instead they can have a break, which may be punctuated or not, but that can show a real change to another dimension.
Okay, so let's just unpack this terminology, link and shift.
Right.
What does it mean?
It means that the two parts of the poem need to connect, yet they need to differ. So there needs to be something which acts as, for instance, as say a linkage or a connection or a juxtaposition. It can be a contrast. But the two should still make sense together, and yet in that minimal form, the best work leaves room for the reader to fill in the space, for them to, as they say, wonder, for them to even, some will say, complete the poem. And they put, in other words, two and two together. It's inferential or implicit, that sort of sense of connection.
I think I read somewhere Basho said about haiku that it should be possible to have multiple meanings. And
yes.
If it didn't have multiple meanings, it didn't succeed as a haiku, something along those lines. Would
yes.
you say that's true about Tanka?
Oh, I think it can be true of the best poetry in any form, to be honest. And I think that poetry which explains itself is something that is less rich and less suggestive.
Yeah. So let's read a couple of tanka from that have somehow stood the test of time. So what have you got there?
Well, I've brought a couple of poems which have stood the test of a very long period of time. So I'm using a few resources here, and one is called An Anthology of Japanese Literature from the Earliest Era to the Mid-19th Century. And it's edited and compiled by a great expert on these matters named Donald Keane. And it emerges that within Japan, well back in the likes of the 10th century AD, so we're talking over a millennium ago, the sourcing of these poems, there was a set of so-called six collections, and Donald Keane has chosen a couple of poems, one from each of a pair of those, about a feature in Japanese life at that time, which was called the Osaka Barrier. And so the first of these is written by a poet of that time whose name, and you know, my pronunciation, please forgive it, the experts on Japanese, if I get it really badly wrong, but Semi Maru, who is a male poet who is said to have been a blind player of the lute. And this is one of the most famous of many poems about the Osaka Barrier.
Let's just remember for a moment what the Osaka Barrier was. It's something like the Berlin Wall, apparently. That
in its time, yes.
Yeah, it's sort of, so the city is surrounded by a wall and then there's a gate, and that's the Osaka Barrier.
Yeah, and I want to emphasise, but from what I understand, it's not in the current city of Osaka, and it's indeed spelt differently in English as A-U rather than O at the start of it. But it was established by a Japanese emperor as a means of controlling movement from east to west, and it allowed for the charging of tolls and was a very strong governmental installation.
Yeah, so kind of customs depot or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so let's hear from Semi Maru.
Okay. This is the barrier where people come and go, exchanging farewells for friends and strangers alike. This is meeting barrier.
So the barrier isn't any barrier to communication.
Exactly. This is what I love about this poem, and that one of the things I was trying to say in the things we started by saying, that sense of implication, it starts off as if there's a very controlling negative side only to this barrier. And what the poet shows beautifully in the final line is instead, because it brings various travellers together to one central point, it gives an opportunity for people to meet who might not otherwise have done so. So in a way, it has this positive when the feeling of it might be that it's controlling and negative.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, no wonder it survived 1,000 years.
And apparently also, I might add, Donald Keane says it's also within the Japanese beautifully musical in the language.
Right.
Which is something we can't get from
No, we won't get that from English. So let's go to Seishonagon.
Okay, so the second poem comes from another one of the six collections, published fully, 130 years later by a second poet, and still about the barrier, but taking quite a different approach. So it goes like this. The night is still dark. Even though you counterfeit the morning cockcrows, they will never let you through Osaka Barrier.
So, yeah, much more like the Berlin Wall in that case, rather than a jolly cosmopolitan trading post.
Absolutely. Yeah. And an extra thing to die is that one thing that I've found interesting across time in reading the work of Japanese masters, for instance, say Basho, is that if you read, you know, annotated versions of translations, they hold or contain a whole lot of footnotes about this poem that inspired the poet or that or whatever. And it's really interesting how often they refer to Chinese literature and how much the Japanese people as readers at that time had a sense of Chinese work. So evidently, it would be common knowledge for a Japanese reader to know that what this second poet is doing is referring to a famous story from China about a fellow who did get his way through a barrier, another barrier over in China, by fooling the gatekeeper by using cockcrows that made it seem like dawn had arrived when it hadn't, and he got through early. But here, saying in Japanese, some cheap trick like that won't work. And so it's meant to be funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's got a lovely charm to it, I think.
It has. And there's a sense of, you know, secret engagements and...
Absolutely.
You know, all kinds of assignations and things going on. Great. So let's go to some modern Australian poets. What would you like to read next?
Well, I've chosen an absolute classic of the writing in this form in this country, an internationally revered poem. And it's by Beverly George, whom I mentioned earlier, who's a really, you know, foremost figure in this area of work in this country. She won a really major prize with this poem internationally, which is the Tanker Society of America's International Tanker Contest. And that's something you'd put on your CV for forever and beyond. That was back in 2006. She's released the poem and she wanted me to say this. I've gained her permission to read it, but she insisted, or not insisted, but she made it clear she felt I should mention that it came from her own book, Empty Garden, and also it's appeared in another journal which she helped to co-edit, which is a lovely collection of 100 tanka by Australian and New Zealand poets, matching a Japanese model. And this is it. It's called A Lightning Strike. A lightning strike splits our old apple tree. I never knew the death that parted us would not be one of ours.
There's a very bleak mood in that. And
absolutely.
One, it suggests it's an offspring, perhaps.
Indeed.
And, yeah, so the so ours is the husband and wife, and then
absolutely,
the one
yes.
of ours is...
It's, it does a lot of the things that I have tried to hint at already, Di, in that it... One key feature, I suppose, maybe I didn't even emphasise enough earlier, is that in the break in the two halves in a tanker, one can often see a shift from what people, you know, a bit cutely might call a move from nature, a focus on nature, to a focus on human nature. And that can be one of those things that leaves the room for wondering. And how Beverly gets that to work so well here is that she shows that a thunderstorm has ruined this beloved old apple tree. And then she leaves that, has a dash after two lines, punctuation-wise, and makes this extraordinary leap as a link and shift to talking about a relationship between the speaker of the poem and what would seem to be a husband or wife, a spouse, a partner. And there's a sense that they've been together for a long time. They could be, you know, facing old age themselves. But unexpectedly, the thing which has drawn, you know, some sort of breach between them is a death that is not one of their own. And as you've said yourself, the answer may be to the mystery, the point of wondering that the poem provides is perhaps it's the death of a child.
Yeah, and I believe very often the death of a child does lead to the breakup of couples. It's too hard to overcome that pain.
Absolutely, and there can be senses of blame and guilt and anger. So Beverly brilliantly leaves you to speculate on that.
Yeah. So let's go to the next contemporary Australian writer. Who do we have?
We have Gavin Austin. So I'm proud to say that this is a poem which my team at my own online journal, Catchment Poetry of Place, has published this piece. I talked about sequences or strings of tanka in discussing things with you, and this is from one. So it's the third poem in a set of four, yet it does stand on its own, and it comes from a set which is called Alberton Cemetery, which Gavin characterises as coming from southeast Gippsland, near, you know, beyond Yarram on the coast. And it wouldn't be the first poem in this form that would be set in a cemetery. I'll give it a go. Marking the place you were lowered at age 6, the slow crumble of stone under moss.
Again, both beautiful and bleak.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very beautiful, but very bleak, yeah.
I will say that you suggested to me in advance that I try to think of pieces that could match up as pairs, and so I am very consciously trying to do that.
Yeah, well, you did well, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, so it sounds like the loss of a brother or something, perhaps.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it is. I don't know if listeners might know in a Western poetic form, a really moving poem by the great Irish poet Seamus Heaney, which is called Midterm Break, and he gets taken from school because his younger brother has passed away. And as soon as I read this piece by Gavin, I find it very moving, very powerful, and I thought of Seamus Heaney as well, but I think it stands absolutely on its own, outside its own sequence, or outside any connection to anyone else's work either.
And it's a very precise observation, the slow crumble of stone under moss. You know, that's a real sense of long time passing, you know, very, that sort of epochs kind of very slow feeling of time.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think you don't have to know that Gavin happens to be, you know, like that experience would be decades back in his own life. Mm. But yeah, it has that, like for us with catchment as a focus, having a focus on what we would also talk about as location, it really evokes this place, showing, you know, the things that occur in cemeteries, that time continues to work its own, you know, to bring its own effects.
Yeah. And now tell me what about Catchment and 3BBR FM, which is the Borbor Radio FM station.
Yeah.
For the listeners who haven't heard about that, what should they know?
Okay. Well, we are very much fortunate to be able to have our literary website within the larger website of another creative group in West Gippsland called the Borbor Arts Alliance. And I'm very grateful to them for that. And we've produced 5 editions, one every 6 months so far. So we're coming up towards our 6th one. And seeing as we're talking about it, I want to say straight out that listeners are really, really welcome to consider acting as contributors. And we are unusual in not only offering the chance for sequences or strings of tanka to be offered when that's not an option elsewhere in Australia at present, sadly, but also we're unusual in that we put 2 poetic subgenres or styles of verse out there as possibilities for poets to offer us work in. You usually don't find tanka being put alongside European style verse, it's instead usually alongside haiku. And so what we want is a focus upon location. We can only offer Australian poets a chance because we have a very small team. We're volunteers and we couldn't cope with a really large inundation of work from offshore. But we're very, very pleased to be able to say that we are publishing around 70 poets per edition, with work coming from all over Australia, with locations within this country and beyond.
Amazing. That's wonderful.
Yeah, so thank you. And we have two other major points of focus, and one is that each month we release an essay about poetry of place, either in the form of tanka or Western free verse. There's a team of us who produce those. And last year, as a third dimension, on an audio level, we recorded a selected set of longer Western free verse poems under a title called Catchment Voices. So if you were to go to our website and you saw that as a little blue button, click on that and you could find a set of recordings. And we will soon release a set of those in tanka as well.
Incredible. So people should look up 3BBRFM's website and...
Oh, yes. And sorry. Yes,
Catchment Voices.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so the 3BBR part of it, which I'm so grateful to as well, is that a really tremendous man there. He acts as the person who records us. His name's Paul Strickland. He puts some of our poetry to air, but he edits our recordings and then sends them through for loading each fortnight once a set of either the longer or the shorter poems are ready to be released. So we have a very strong ongoing collaboration between the Borbor Arts Alliance and 3BBR-FM. The double B stands for Borbor as well.
Nice. And it's all happening out of Gippsland.
Yeah, it happens around Warrigal and Druin and Trafalgar. Those three towns are the ones where these various projects are located largely.
Excellent. Now, I'd like you to read some of your tanka. So what would you like to read?
Well, as a third set of things, you've offered me a chance to read some work of my own. And so I've chosen pieces from a couple of representative anthologies, one that came out of Eucalypt, the lovely tanka-only journal that Beverly George did start. She's passed the editing of that on to someone else now. But this piece is a really in-the-moment piece that happened to me directly. Glass marble with a helix in blue, harvesting from my vegetable plot another man's childhood.
That's very beautiful.
Thank you. And really true. I literally was digging up potatoes.
Yep.
And brought up a glass marble. Yes. Instead as an earth-based vegetable.
It's funny how meaningful those small things can be. You know, they do represent a whole time. I mean, nowadays, you know, as older people, we would never play with marbles.
Yes,
know?
Yes. Yeah. It was a sort of like in our place, which is an old place, there's this, it's for a kind of amateur archaeology by accident.
Yes.
I know the man who owned the marble. I still have it because I've written the poem about it. But, yeah, an extra thing, if I may quickly say, is that I had a really beloved older sister who started me writing. I mean, I've just turned 70 and she got me writing poems when I was 15. So I've been doing it for 55 years. And unfortunately, she passed away soon after I wrote that poem,
oh,
but made a point of saying that it was one of her favourites of mine. And so that's partially why I've brought it here today too.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful work, yeah. So let's get to the next one.
Okay, so this next one does come from a sequence, and it was about travelling through East Gippsland with my lovely daughter, and it was her last holiday away with me. She's starting to grow up, university student by that time. She's really happy with her own children, lovely marriage and everything now. But this was our last holiday together down near Cape Conran. And so this is a piece which appeared in an American journal, Atlas Poetica, and also in a world best anthology for the year published by that publisher.
Well, that's a very big affirmation,
yeah,
isn't
it? Yeah, that's like, why I brought this one here. That's,
I really
that's,
am doing all right.
That's true. So here we go. Past the pier, a cormorant surfacing, well away from where it dived, your message safely home.
Lovely, yeah.
So my daughter did move on in her own life, and, you know, I'm not trying to give too many spoilers or embarrass her, but the fact was that on that break, I suddenly found she was ducking out to, and one of the other poems in the sequence does establish this, and she was sort of on the phone a lot, and it turned out that there was this new male friend, and so that was another sign that there was this change, you know, and things were altering, and of course it's really positive, and you want your kids to find their own way and everything, but it was lovely that she gave that courtesy of letting me know that she'd you know, she'd got home safely as well.
Yeah, beautiful.
And the again, there's an attempt to have the natural image as a symbol of the cormorant representing her making her own way away, back to the human reference to the text message.
Yeah, beautiful. Well done.
Thanks.
Nice. So we might have time for one more. What would you like to read?
Well, I could read one more by a famous Japanese waka poet. I should have said this earlier, that originally the tanka form was known by that name, W-A-K-A. And one of the really great exponents of it was a woman named Ono no Komachi, who was thought of as one of the half dozen best poets of her time, when the other five were, of course, male. And she is still seen as a symbol of beauty in Japan, when no one actually knows what she really looked like. So there are these images of her online, but there are imaginative images from an artist. So this poem is what, like, one of many that various courtly women in earlier times in Japan wrote, full of passion and longing in love, and often about loss or denial, in that, in a courtly sense, they couldn't have the man be with them. Did he come to me because I fell asleep longing for him? If I had known it was a dream, I would never have awakened.
Beautiful. Yeah. Very kind of erotic.
Indeed. Yeah.
It's, yeah.
So could I just say quickly, just in ending, that but going back to Catchment, that the submission period opens on the 21st of March and runs through to the 21st of May. And if people like to have a look at our submission guidelines on the website, Catchment Poetry of Place, it'd be wonderful to hear from different contributors. Thanks.
Yeah, well, thank you, Rodney. I've been talking to Rodney Williams about tanka, the Japanese form, and I just note that Rodney's got a couple of books, Fred the Rescue Cat from Piccolo Poets, and also
A Bird Loving Man, Haiku and Tanka.
A Bird Loving Man, Haiku and Tanka. And we'll have to leave it there. But thank you for coming in.
Thanks so much.
My name is Di Cousins, and this has been the Spoken Word Program. 3CR.